Good day. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take on this Friday Eve. Jay Will gracing your screen. Good to see you, sir. Kendrick Perkins is going to be in the building.
For what?
I'm told.
For what?
And Ryan Clark also joining us.
No, I saw him.
There's a lot of NBA to get into.
I saw him in the hallway taking up space. You know what I'm saying? I had to go around the corner just to get to the bathroom because he was blocking the path.
Yeah, I heard he wants to address you like the numbers on the house. Isn't that his line, or did I screw that up?
Whatever. You probably screwed it up.
You're such a hater. I didn't screw it up. Well, I know carry on, and that's where I'm going now. Hey, Jay, great to have you with us. Let's get to it, guys. We're staying on the East Coast. A third straight stellar performance as a 76er for James Harden. How about them apples? Finished with 26 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists in Philadelphia's 123-108 victory over the New York Knicks in front of a sellout crowd Wednesday night. His first game in front of fans in Wells Fargo Center, James Harden declared Philadelphia, Stephen A. It feels like home.
Mm-hmm. It was great, man. Just the excitement from the beginning of the game. You know, I felt the energy. I felt the love. So I wanted to just come out there and show my love back. And I just wanted to play well on both ends of the ball, ultimately get the win.
I mean, we all just fit together. You know, you got a, you know, someone in James that comes in with his experience and you know, his playmaking ability, scoring ability, you combine that with, you know, what he adds, and he's been amazing. And what we have on the team, you know, he all fits.
Mm. Chemistry, no issue. Philly having fun, sitting two games back of the Heat for the top spot in the Eastern Conference standings. Stephen A.,
yeah.
How excited should we be about Harden's Sixer start?
That depends on who you ask.
Well, I'm asking you.
If you ask the city of Philadelphia, they should be very excited. I mean, after all, you had Ben Simmons, who was not even in the arena, okay? And you replaced that with one of the greatest scorers in the history of basketball in James Harden. If you ask somebody like me, what's the big deal? And here's what I mean by this. Ladies and gentlemen, I would remind y'all that the Philadelphia 76ers are 3-0 since James Harden arrived.
Yeah.
Take away the open-the-night victory for him against Minnesota. And who did he play the last two games?
Why am I taking him away? The Knicks.
The damn Knicks.
Yeah.
The damn New York Knicks. I mean, you know, am I supposed to be excited about that?
I don't know. You lost a bet about the Knicks. You had them going places
I lost the bet. There is no way around it. I lost the bet to that man right there. Jay Williams, I owe him a suit. I actually have, not only did I promise to get him a suit, I promised to take him and get him fitted for the suit and damn near buy the suit. I mean, I mean, I've lost the bet.
Thank
now,
you.
If I lost the bet in April, late March, I wouldn't be this upset. But to be at Christmas time, I mean, Christmas time, we knew I lost the damn bet. January, the new year, I lost the bet. And I mean, February has been worse. And so I'm looking at it, and I'm saying the New York Knicks have now lost, 14 of their last 17 games. I don't know who the hell the schedule makers are. Do you know the New York Knicks have lost every single game that countdown has led into a New York Knicks game?
Oh,
0-8.
Wait, time out.
0-8.
Time out. Is it like a black cat's running around since you joined Countdown?
No.
It seems like every time you do Countdown, they lose. It's like they're cursed.
Well, first of all, I want to give mad love to Mike Greenberg, Mike Wilbon, Jalen Rose. All of that stuff is true. But if you're going to talk about a black cat, just remember to mention that the ratings were up over 58%. So all I'm trying to tell y'all is to just put it in proper perspective.
Okay.
Ain't no black cat.
Okay.
The black cat, the Knicks, not me.
No one said the show's not good.
The show's great.
We just said it happens to be when you do the show, the Knicks lose.
All I'm trying to say is that the New York Knicks are the team that went up against James Harden. Let's understand. We know how great he is. We know how phenomenal he is. We know that he's one of the most prolific scorers the game has ever seen. We have expectations. All I'm saying is, let's pay attention to who they're playing against if we're going to rave over the first three games. Because they were 35-23 before he arrived, okay? It wasn't like they were losing. They went in there a damn good team, and he makes them better. But they were playing the Knicks. Go ahead, Jim.
Number one, that has nothing to do with the 76ers, just about your Knicks squad. I thought Black History Month was supposed to be a month of celebration for you and us, Stephen A. But they gave you one win during the month of February? One win during the month of one? Just one win? That's it? I just wanted to say that. Felt like it was a disservice to how we're supposed to be prideful. Anyway, I move forward. Anyway.
You're right.
I do want to address this because I think it's interesting to me that it wouldn't mean anything to you about what the Philadelphia 76ers have done. Last time I noticed, the Minnesota Timberwolves are in seventh place in the West.
They're a good team. They're a good
team. They are a playoff team. Last time I checked, Karl-Anthony Towns, D'Lo, Anthony Edwards are guys that have been hooping as of late.
So I didn't see anything about Minnesota.
A good win opening night. And, yes, about the team that won one game in February. I can make the counter-argument, Stephen A., that as a basketball player, a lot of times it's easy to play down to the level of your competition. It would have been easy for the 76ers to see the Knicks on their schedule and think, okay, games in New York. Now, think about it for James Harden's perspective, right? What have been things people have been saying about James Harden? He goes out on the road. He's kicking it. Is he with little baby before a game? Is he really committed? How does his body look? He's out of shape. He's not really attacking. Oh, he has something wrong with his finger when he was playing in Sacramento. Can't really play when he was with the Nets. All these different excuses that could have came to the situation. But no, when I look at James Harden's body, I'm like, how the hell did he lose 10 to 15 pounds already? My man looks chiseled.
In two weeks.
He looks like he's ready.
In two weeks.
He's ready to play. He's ready to be here. By the way, he's averaging in his three games with the 76ers 27, 9 rebounds, and 12 and a half assists. So
two games against the Knicks.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, two games. I hear what you're saying about doesn't mean anything to you. But from a basketball eye perspective, regardless of whoever their opponent is, the way it looks is the way it looks. And the way this looks to me and my basketball eye is that the pieces fit. Now, there's still questions around Tobias Harris. Can he become activated? Yeah, but what I'm seeing Tyrese Maxey do, how I'm seeing this team corral around them.
Come on, SA. We're going to find out about it when it's to the American public. You're lying to the American public.
Who's the best team in the Eastern Conference?
You know
who's the best team in the Eastern Conference, Stephen A.?
You know that. Excuse me, who's the best team in the Eastern Conference? Excuse me, last time I checked, Miami was the number one team before they lost last night. Chicago's still there. Milwaukee's still there. And, oh, by the way, we're talking about all of this stuff. We haven't seen Brooklyn yet, which is a story we will get into without question, because I got some questions about that. We haven't seen Brooklyn on the court yet.
Time out. You gave me three answers. You gave me three answers. I said, who is the best team in the Eastern Conference? You gave me Chicago, Miami. Who's the best team in the Eastern Conference?
Well, right now, I would tell you Miami is, even after a loss to Milwaukee. I would tell you Milwaukee is as well. I understand you got James Harden with Joel Embiid. I'm saying to you, can we see them against competition? Let me go back to the Knicks for a second.
You just gave me two teams. You gave me two teams again. You're not giving me one. You're giving me two. I never see you flounder this way. Who's the best team in Eastern?
Time out.
Okay.
I've said this on numerous occasions. The list is fluid.
Okay.
It's fluid, okay? It's going to move. It's going to move. We're going to deal with it. The list is fluid. It's going to be fluid.
Lordy,
it's going to be fluid, all right? Just like the MVP race. It's fluid. It's nothing definitive. It's fluid. But let's get back to the Knicks for a second here, because you talk about playing down to the competition. Okay, let me tell you this. I'm going to go late January for you to now, okay? Charlotte didn't play down to the competition. Minnesota didn't play down to the competition. New Orleans Pelicans didn't play down to the competition. Cleveland Cavaliers didn't play down to the competition. Miami didn't. Milwaukee didn't. Memphis didn't. L.A. didn't. The Lakers, they didn't. Utah didn't. Denver didn't. Portland Trailblazers did not. Oklahoma City did not. Brooklyn without KD, Kyrie, and James Harden did not. Miami again did not. And Philadelphia in back-to-back encounters did not. Nobody else played down to the competition when they went up against the New York Knicks. So why should we expect or throw a parade because James Harden and the Philadelphia 76ers did it?
Because they won the games they were supposed to win. I've never heard somebody criticize a team or not look great about a team who gets wins. And it's the way it looked, Stephen A. I see how you dress every day. I may be going through the airport. I can't hear what's coming out of your mouth. But I'm like, man, he is killing. He's animated on the camera. It looks right. It feels right. You're telling me that last night, regardless of whether them beating the Knicks or the Sacramento Kings, it didn't look right to you? That's what you're trying to tell me on national TV?
I'm not trying to tell you it didn't look right to me. I'm trying
so
to tell
you.
So
that's my point.
No, I'm trying to tell you that Philadelphia was a good team before he arrived. And what we're going to learn about the Philadelphia 76ers with James Harden in tow is who they're going to be when they go up against different competition. What I am saying is we know he's great. We know Embiid is great. We know Doc Rivers is great. We know that's a damn good team. What we don't know is what they're going to look like when they go up against stiffer competition, because the New York Knicks don't qualify as that. Now, that breaks my damn heart to say it. You my boy, so you know that breaks my heart to say it. All you did was provoke me to say the damn thing at 10 o'clock in the morning on national television because you wanted to get on my damn nerves to start the show, because you know exactly what I'm saying is 1,000% correct. The New York Knicks are not the appropriate litmus test for the Harden and B tandem that we're expecting to see, because we know they're both great. We need to see them against stiffer competition, because the New York Knicks at this stage does not qualify as that.
So you just said that the 76ers were already a good team without James Harden, correct?
Damn good team.
How good were they in the East? What does damn good mean to you in the East before James Harden?
They were like top four seed. Top four seed.
Oh, so now you're telling me adding James Harden doesn't make them a higher seed than that? Make them better?
I think it could make them better. I expect the Philadelphia 76ers to be in the conference finals.
Okay.
I don't think they're getting out of the East.
Okay, so wait. If you're telling me that you already thought they were a damn good team, mm-hmm. and now you're telling me they add James Harden, and you say to me it looks right, why are you worried about what it's going to look like against the upper tier teams when you already know what it's been like before they had a James Harden? Stephen, make any sense.
Oh, so we want to talk but not let me answer the question. I'm going to answer your question. The answer to that question is my expectations are what they are. If you've got Harden and Embiid, anything less than a berth to the NBA Finals, okay, That has to be it.
Yes.
I expect the Brooklyn Nets to be standing in their way. That's what I expect. Now, I'm hopeful.
Okay, let's go there now.
Now, I am hopeful. It's Miami for obvious reasons. But I expect the Brooklyn Nets to be standing in their way.
Can I get the call during the Eastern Conference Finals to come down and hang out with you guys? Please, if it's in Miami.
No,
please call me.
I won't have
right
time.
Here.
I won't have time to hang out with you in South Beach. That won't happen. Okay. And I won't have time to hang out with you.
I don't want to hang out with you. I'm already with you 10 hours a week.
I won't have time to hang out with any of y'all.
Your fedora, your cigar, South Beach, it looks right.
You know what, Jay? I don't even want to know. Let's just get to Brooklyn. Yeah. All right. Which is still not whole. Kyrie Irving can still not play in home games in New York because he's unvaccinated. Good news, though, Kevin Durant expected back tonight. Can't wait for this game. Jay, are you going? Brooklyn hosting the first place Heat. Before KD got hurt, the Nets were in second place, a half game out of first in the East. Now they're in eighth, 9 games out of first. Talk about impact. And on Monday, the Nets said Ben Simmons still has not been cleared for practice as he recovers from back soreness. He will not practice the rest of this week, and his timetable to return is unknown. Stephen A., what's the bigger story? Is it KD's return, or is it that Simmons is still not playing?
To me, it's KD's return. And the reason why I say it's KD's return, because, you know, he's the man. When healthy, I believe that Kevin Durant is the best player on the planet. That's how I feel about him. And so because of that, I don't think it's a coincidence that the Nets went on an 11-game losing streak the second that he went down. I don't think it's a coincidence that they were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference when he was healthy, in spite of Kyrie Irving's sporadic availability because he wasn't there at home games and James Harden wanting out. They were still the number one seed in the Eastern Conference when Kevin Durant was healthy. He goes down. Now they're trying to make sure they can at least make it to the play-in game, okay? That's how lethal Kevin Durant is. And so when I look at it from that perspective, all right, and I look at the question marks that exist with Kyrie Irving and the vaccine mandate, with Ben Simmons, who is another matter, and as far as I'm concerned, it has become an atrocity. I'm sick of this stuff with Ben Simmons. I really, really am. Because, again, we want to be very, very clear and very, very mindful that we're not minimizing the importance of mental health issues. And I'm not even thinking, Jay, about what the hell he was going through while he was in Philadelphia. Here's what I do know. Since the brother has arrived in Brooklyn, with the exception of the very first game that took place after he got traded to Brooklyn, because he hadn't arrived in Brooklyn yet, as of yet. He's been with the team for every single game. He's been on the bench. He's been slapping high fives. He's been congratulating everybody. He's been laughing up a storm. He's been feeling, he's been looking phenomenal. And we know he's healthy because he hasn't played. No, he's physically healthy, so he hasn't played. Why the hell has this man not been on the court, not been cleared to practice and all of this other? This, something's up. Something's up. All of that stuff puts more of the onus on the shoulders of Kevin Durant when he comes back healthy, because we all know what he can do. He just has to do what we always know him to do. That's all I mean by that.
The answer is Ben Simmons for all those reasons you just stated, Stephen A. Mm-hmm. You know, you said that when KD was healthy, they were the number one team in the Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. They also were the number one team because they had James Harden on that team, who was giving them such a lethal scoring punch in games in which Kyrie couldn't play. So I got to tell you, I'm really worried about my Nets squad right now, because now Kyrie Irving is only playing on road games due to this new private sector mandate that nobody ever heard of until now all of a sudden we heard of and is a thing, number one. But now when you go to home games, now you're asking KD off the Achilles injury he had a couple years ago, coming back playing. It's the knee issue now to come back and now just to be great, which he can be. But this is where you need Ben Simmons more than ever. And I'm worried about what Ben Simmons am I going to get if I'm going to get Ben Simmons, because we lose, the Nets lose that scoring punch that they had with James Harden. And how Ben Simmons comes back and plays, in particular in home games in which Kyrie can't help offload some of the issues by scoring and his dynamic self that he brings to the table offensively, this is where you need Ben Simmons more than ever. And there's no time, I don't understand how there's not a timetable on him coming back to play. And, you know, it's lower back issues because he's working on his conditioning again. I hear all that, but it seems like the environment has changed. And now if there's any time that Ben needs to answer the call, it's coming up in these next couple of weeks. And they need him more than ever in order to help KD elevate. You can't have KD off his injury guarding the other team's best player. That's something that Ben Simmons needs to do, because you want KD's legs to be saved for the offensive punches you need at home, in particular at the Barclays Center.
Well, I think that we're confusing our points here, because I'm talking, the reason why I brought up KD is because we know Ben Simmons is not going to be available for the immediate future. And considering the fact that the Nets recently lost 11 straight, and now they've lost 15 of 13, and now it's 13 of 15 rather, and now it's 15 of their last 18 games, okay? And they're one game above 500 after being the number one seed when KD was on the court. I'm saying, because of the question marks about Ben Simmons, because of the continual question marks about Kyrie, who's only got 7 games left available to play on the road, the rest of them are supposed to be at the Barclays Center, and the vaccine mandate hasn't been lifted. That's where I'm bringing KD into the equation. I'm not disagreeing with your points about Ben Simmons, but the first order of business is for him to get on the damn court. And it's gotten to a point where we got to speak up about this. I mean, we really do. I mean, listen. I'm dicey about it. I know how sensitive you are about the subject, Jay. Mental health is a serious, serious thing.
Yes, it is.
And listen, there are people who don't believe him, and we've talked about that issue. I'm not even going there. Forget about what people believe. Forget about Philadelphia. He's in Brooklyn now. Here's my point to Ben Simmons. You're in Brooklyn. How is it that you're healthy, physically healthy to play basketball, and you're on the bench with new teammates in a new city, high-fiving, laughing, and having a good time, and traveling with the team? But somehow, some way, you can't put on a uniform. Pat Riley, you know, in the book, Blood in the Garden, Chris Aaron in the New York Times, the great job that he did with that book, right? He told the story of Pat Riley being in a locker room and a player walking in with his street clothes on. And Pat Riley said to him, with everything on the line, he said, if we desperately, desperately needed you, could you give us 3 minutes? And that player said, sure, I could do that for you. Mm-hmm. And Pat Riley said, then what the hell are you doing here with your street clothes on? Put on a damn uniform then. And my point is, we couldn't say that about Ben Simmons in Philly for the reasons that you and I discussed, Jay. But we can say it now.
Yeah.
You're in Brooklyn. You're happy. You're with guys that you want to be with a team that you're happy to be with. And your brothers need you. You smiling, high-fiving, dressed in street clothes. What the hell are you doing? Not to mention the fact, what damage are you doing to your contemporaries? Because the owners are going to remember this.
There you go.
They're going to remember this. They're going to look at that anytime these players are talking about their money and what have you, because you get paid now. The owner's going to be like, this is what we paying for? You to travel with the team. So they got to pay for his travel. They got to pay for his hotel room. You know he ain't paying for his own meals. They giving him some meals, too. You're giving him a check to sit on the bench and smile when you're 100% healthy and ready to go. You got to be kidding me, man. That's why this is on KD in terms of what he's got to do. It's a damn shame he has to do it. But we got to stop glossing over this. This isn't Ben Simmons in Philadelphia anymore. He's in Brooklyn. Smiling more than me and you.
I am on the same page with you on this. I don't know what that buffer time is that he needs. I would like some more specification for him about what his time frame is. I think that will be helpful to help people understand what it is he's going through. And once again, to echo your sentiment around the sensitivities of mental health, I get all that. I've gone through those places. But the one thing I recognize is that now you're asking KD off a knee injury to be prolific once again. And, you know, people always say, oh, what happens to the second half of the season after All-Star break? I'm like, no. We're in the last third of the season. We're in a stretch now. We're in a sprint. So now you're asking KD to sprint to get back to where he was, you know, before he got hurt. And you're looking at Ben Simmons saying, this is why we need you. And here's my thing, Stephen A. If your environment has changed, if the people you're around has changed, I need to understand. I think there will be more pressure on Ben Simmons now. And his teammates will start to look at him saying, what else can we do for you to help you get back on the court, to help us when we need you now
absolutely.
More than ever?
Yeah, we got to go. Absolutely, it's crunch time. But according to the team on Monday, they said it's because of back soreness.
They're just protecting.
Jay Williams.
They're just protecting Molly.
I'm just reporting the news.
I hear you, Molly.
It, I report
He's scared to play in Philly. I'm accusing him. He's scared to play in Philly March 10th. That's what this is about.
Jay will be back. Now we're going to bring in Ryan Clark because we want to get to some football here. Aaron Rodgers' watch 2022 continues. Outside of weekly appearances with Pat McAfee and lengthy IG posts, we haven't heard much on Aaron's much-anticipated decision. Their GM said they've received no trade offers for Rodgers. Meanwhile, Coach Matt LaFleur is trying to give that bad man a little space.
You always want to be respectful because I know it's a lot to take on. He's got a lot to think about, and certainly I'm making sure that I consistently communicate with him, but also want to be respectful of his time and the process that he has to go through.
All right, Super Bowl champ Brian Clark here with us. I'm assuming coming live from Indy. RC,
yes,
good to
ma'am.
See you. How we doing?
Doing
all over
well.
The combine
good to see
stuff.
You. Good to see you as well. And Stephen A., you are right, too.
Right.
He's such a traitor.
Do you think the Packers should be frustrated with Rodgers?
No, and you know why? Because the Green Bay Packers put themselves in this position. The Green Bay Packers allowed Aaron Rodgers to sit at the table throughout last year and even at the beginning of training camp and make his contract what it is going into 2022. They allowed him to have the responsibility or the privilege of making roster changes and roster moves. And now they've allowed him to hold this team hostage. And Aaron Rodgers is doing exactly what a great future Hall of Fame player should do. He's taking his time. When you have leverage, when you have the power as a player, it is incumbent that you use it. It is mandatory that you use it. And Aaron Rodgers shouldn't rush his decision for the Green Bay Packers. And I believe as well, that's why Matt LaFleur is taking the approach that he's taken. Matt LaFleur didn't look frustrated to me. Matt LaFleur looked patient. Matt LaFleur looked like a guy that understood and kind of felt that Aaron Rodgers would be back with the Green Bay Packers at the beginning of the season. So whether he makes that decision on Monday, whether he makes that decision on Friday, or if that decision doesn't come until April, the Green Bay Packers have no choice but to wait. They can't call Aaron Rodgers and say, hey, if you don't make a decision by tomorrow, we are cutting you. Because when you let him rework his contract, you knowing that his cap hit is going to be, or was going to be, what it will be in 2022, you should have been prepared for this. You should have been working your way to having all contingency plans in place to be ready to adapt and adjust based on Aaron Rodgers' decision. And so now you can't be surprised that he may be being selfish or that he may be thinking of himself because you allowed him to do it.
I feel where you're coming from, Ryan. I totally understand it. But I still think that they should be frustrated. You can put yourself in a position where somebody can exercise leverage, and that's true, but there's also something called an abuse of power. Mm. And I think that that's something that we have to look at when it comes to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, right now, we know how I feel about him. I think he's the baddest man I've ever seen at the quarterback position from a talent perspective. Certainly not the resume and results that the great, like Tom Brady, has. But in terms of his talent, Aaron Rodgers is the baddest that I've ever seen. And bad meaning good. And I got a lot of love and respect for him in that regard. The problem that I have is that I can't stand when people walk around acting like champions when they're not. And that's a big issue. I have no problem with Aaron Rodgers if Aaron Rodgers is just like this right now, Ryan. If he closed the deal, ended up at SoFi, handled their business, wins the Super Bowl championship, and say, yeah, y'all treated me like garbage. Y'all were disrespecting me. Y'all weren't paying enough attention to the things that I wanted for years. Now it's my turn. I totally understand that, but that's not what happened. What happened was is that he came up short in inclement weather at Lambeau Field against Jimmy Garoppolo and the San Francisco 49ers, and he couldn't put 14 points on the board. He didn't lose 42-40 or something like that. Remember years ago when he lost a playoff game to Arizona and it was like bombs away and he dropped over 40 and they lost? No. His offense couldn't do anything. The Green Bay Packers is horrible and awful as Matt LaFleur's special teams was, okay? A special team that he did not fix all year long. As horrible as that was, they still only ended up with 13 points at Lambeau Field, and you still couldn't beat them. And so for me, when that's what the backdrop is, I'm not saying that you don't take time to think about your decision or whatever the case may be, but it almost seems like you want the question marks. Do you want the storylines? This is why both you and I said, we done with this story.
Yeah.
Call us when you made a decision.
Yep.
We never said that about Tom Brady. By the way, Tom Brady, we're talking about that later on in the show because of some things going on with him. Tell us when we've been tired of talking about Tom Brady. You know why? Because he got it done. But if somebody don't get it done, we don't like you walking around acting like you did get it done. And in the case of Aaron Rodgers, in the playoffs, I know he's the MVP, two-time reigning MVP. The numbers speak for themselves during the regular season. But despite back-to-back 13-3 seasons, all right, or actually 13-4.
Yep.
All right, despite that, not one single Super Bowl appearance, let alone Super Bowl title, to show for it. I'm sorry. That's how I feel.
Well, I hear you, but we're talking about the Green Bay Packers, right? And the Green Bay Packers aren't necessarily paying attention to whether or not Aaron Rodgers has won a championship in the last 2 years. Because what they do know is, for the last 2 years, he's been the best quarterback in football. And Aaron Rodgers knows that as well. The one thing I always say about football players or any athlete is, you are an independent contractor. When Aaron Rodgers is thinking of Aaron Rodgers, when Aaron Rodgers is making Aaron Rodgers decisions, he's making those decisions off of what Aaron Rodgers has done. And he's going to look at the 17 games that he played last season, and he's going to be like, you know what? In two of those games, I could have been better. I could have been better against the New Orleans Saints. I could have been better against the San Francisco 49ers. But for the rest of them, I was the best that they ever had out there. I was the baddest man walking in every stadium I was in. And that's the way Aaron Rodgers feels. And so when Aaron Rodgers is making this decision, he ain't making this decision like, oh, I didn't get a ring. He's making a decision that for the last 2 years, playing the position I play, the most the most powerful and the most meaningful, the most important position in football, I'm the best that's doing it. The Green Bay Packers know that, and Aaron Rodgers knows that. The Green Bay Packers knew that the first day of training camp when they allowed him to rework his contract. The Green Bay Packers also knew that when they said, you know what? We never promised Aaron Rodgers a trade because they know they can't get anybody better, Stephen A. Aaron Rodgers is operating from a position of power. You are right. And he may be abusing that power. But as a former player, as someone that was on the NFLPA executive board, I say good for him. They do it all the time. The teams hold the contracts. They hold the leverage. They hold the power. And they do with you as they please.
Oh,
no matter what that contract says.
Don't get it twisted. I'm not favoring the Green Bay Packers. I have no problem with them suffering. I'm talking about us having to talk about it. That's what I'm talking about. I don't give a damn about the Green Bay Packers. You're absolutely right. They deserve it. For all the reasons. Yeah. I'm talking about us. I'm talking about me and you. That's what I'm talking about. You give a damn about the Green Bay Packers.
RC, we're up against it. I need a yes-no answer here. Do you think he stays in Green Bay? Or
yes.
Do you think we get the decision part two where he sits down at the Boys and Girls Club and takes his talents elsewhere?
Listen, as sure as Mad Dog was tearing Stephen A. up yesterday, Aaron Rodgers will be the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers.
Well, first of all, Mad Dog got torn up, okay? He got me one good debate, but that's fine. Our dead clock is right once or twice a day. But in the end, I think Aaron Rodgers is staying too because I think his options, Molly, his options, we're just looking at it out there, and it just, like, he can go other places, but it's not going to get any better than where he's at.
Real quick, what show did Mad Dog get torn up? You joined him on radio or something?
First Take.
Oh.
I know you can act like that.
Oh,
you know
Molly. Shots fired.
You know what I'm saying?
RC, get some good steak out there.
Maybe
Indy.
I need to host First Take, since I would recall. All right, but it's all right.
Okay. Rye, you're actually back with us, so don't have steak. It's maybe steak and eggs. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. breaking news on the MLB front. Representatives from MLB and the Players Association plan to have an informal one-on-one meeting today to resume talks amid baseball's work stoppage. A source told ESPN's Jeff Passan, MLB Deputy Commissioner Dan Hallam, and Players Association attorney Bruce Myers meeting today in New York will mark the first meeting since MLB canceled the first week of regular season games Tuesday. We will continue to monitor this story throughout the day on ESPN and ESPN.com. To the NBA, John Morant making a strong case for MVP. Memphis in action tonight in Boston. The Grizz are third in the West, just a half game behind second place Golden State. Speaking of the Warriors, Steph Curry also knows how to steal the show. Meanwhile, the Dubs facing the Mavs, who are getting hot tonight. Golden State falling off of late, eagerly awaiting the return of Draymond Green and James Wiseman. Jay Will back here with us. Jay, who would you rather have down the stretch? Would it be Steph Curry or Ja Morant?
So Steph Curry is the best three-point shooter of all time, the greatest shooter that I think the game has ever seen. But I think it's important to decipher these moments between clutch and the greatest shooter that we've ever seen. Because typically, when you're in clutch moments, you're facing double teams, and the degree of difficulty with the shots become way more drastic, right? So when you look at the numbers for this year, Stephen Curry is shooting 32% from the field in clutch moments, 19% from the three-point line in clutch moments. Now, I know the body of work for Ja Morant is not the same sample size that it is for Steph Curry, right? We've seen Steph Curry win championships. We've seen him in big-time playoff games. We just saw Ja Morant make it to the playoffs for the first time in his career last year. But there is something about the clutch gene for me. Now, Stephen A., there's no statistics that can prove this will be better. But there is something about his ability to create shots off the dribble and his ability to finish at the rim. I think hit the variety because of the versatility in the ways he can score, right? Off the bounce, the dynamic ability he has to finish over the top of people, how he's able to knock down the three better this year than he has before, is Ja Morant. I just think Ja Morant is, he has a slight edge for MVP for me. Now, you can argue with me that that deserves to be given to Joel Embiid, or that deserves to be given to Nikola Jokic, and all those are reasonable arguments. But for him to have this team in the position to be third best in the NBA, only a game or two behind the Golden State Warriors, and I think you're starting to see the Golden State Warriors without Draymond Green, how much that means to this team is a huge loss in Steph's ability to get his shot off in those clutch moments due to his passing ability. I look at what Ja Morant is doing with Memphis, and I look at the components they have around him, I look at the way and the moxie he's played with this year. I would pick Ja Morant over Stephen Curry right now for clutch moments to get it done down the stretch.
Ja Morant is a superstar in the making, blossoming before our very eyes. I think that the Memphis Grizzlies have a shot to be the number two seed in the Western Conference. I have no issue with anybody that would put Ja Morant number one in the MVP race right now because of what we've seen over him, from him over the last week or so. Still DeMar DeRozan, Joel Embiid, Jokic, Giannis, they're all in the race. And I think that especially the first four in terms of Ja, DeMar DeRozan, Joel Embiid, Jokic, I think that when you take into account everything that's been transpiring with these guys, I definitely think that it's a nip and tuck. The list is fluid. It's going to continue to move for the rest of this season as we race to the playoffs. But I ain't picking no damn Ja Morant over Steph Curry. I'm not doing that because Steph Curry is the greatest shooter I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not doing it. Now, I'm saying this recognizing that from the field and from three-point range, these are the lowest numbers we've ever seen in Steph Curry's career. I'm saying this knowing that. So why would I do that? Well, there's something to be said for trying to, you know, matriculate Klay Thompson back into the proceedings. You got to get him going. You got to be a bit deferential. There's something to be said about being smart enough to be out on the court but still saving yourself because you've been to five straight finals and you are a three-time champion and you know what's required in the postseason. So it's important for Jordan Poole, Toscano Anderson, Peyton II, and others to really get into the mix because you're going to need these brothers down the stretch, especially with Memphis and Phoenix looking the way that they've been looking. There's also something to be said about the ultimate playmaker being out for more than a month now in Draymond Green. And so when you look at it from that perspective and his ability to set up Steph and Klay, not to mention how he elevates the team defensively as well and what he brings to the table on both ends of the floor and how easier the game is for Steph Curry mm-hmm. and others when Draymond Green is out there. Mm-hmm. When we're talking playoffs, when we're talking, like if you're talking to me about MVP, Steph ain't nowhere near it compared to Ja Morant right now. Totally understand that. But if you're talking playoff time, well, playoff time, we all of those pieces that we're talking about that they're devoid of in Golden State are going to be addressed by then. And so when I look at Memphis right now, I'm seeing what I'm seeing. And I expect them to be incredibly formidable and Ja Morant to lead the way, being the star that he is. And I definitely saw him elevate his level of play come postseason time. I'm not underestimating any of that. But I also expect to see the better version of Steph Curry, which we have seen in the past, once he got all of his horses available to him. That's going to be playoff time. And that is why I would go with Steph instead of Ja Morant.
Who on the Memphis Grizzlies has the talent caliber of Klay Thompson?
Who on the Memphis Grizzlies has the ability to shoot? Nobody can shoot like that.
Okay. Nobody. How about Draymond Green? Maybe you can compare Dylan Brooks.
Yeah,
maybe
you compare guys.
So what I'm looking at is you saying that due to Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, those pieces that help Stephen Curry in those moments because it relieves the pressure. And what I'm saying is on the Memphis side, if you're telling me you're talking about guys like Desmond Bain, even though he's playing well, Mallett, if you're talking about Jaren Jackson, if you're talking about slow-mo relieving the pressure for Ja Morant, the ball's in Ja Morant's hands all the damn time. He's making plays left and right. Now, I'm not saying that diminishes Stephen Curry's ability to make plays.
Right.
I'm just saying, I think it's interesting with this argument because can you take me through a list of those clutch moments that really make you trust Steph Curry down the clutch?
I think that's great. You know, I'm glad you brought that up because I think that's incredibly unfair to Steph Curry. Steph Curry, I'm going to tell you why. Because, yes, you have Klay Thompson who can also shoot the ball. You've had a situation where Golden State has been so explosive. There's been many, many blowouts in postseason action. They just take you out of the gym. You see what I'm saying? So many people are talking about and they're judging Steph by clutch moments, just like we judge James Harden by clutch moments. Well, last time I checked, these brothers are averaging better than 26 a game in the postseason. Mm-hmm. They didn't nosedive and fall off the map. They didn't sit up there and play like scrubs. They didn't show, you know, they didn't do what they did in a regular season at times, and I get that. But there have been some explosive playoff performances by Steph Curry.
Yes, they have.
We've seen that. And so all I'm saying is when I look at it from that perspective and I'm thinking about how much better they're going to be once they have their horses, yes, Steph might have somebody else to be deferential to because if Klay gets hot, you keep feeding him. We get all of that. We understand that. The flip side to it, however, I'm leaning on his abilities and his experience, and I'm not judging by what I'm seeing right now. To some degree, you have to be honest. Even though you're looking at Ja Morant and Memphis like everybody should be looking at them and you're giving them their props where it's due, you're also looking at what you're seeing from Steph during this season as the litmus test to decide who you will and would not want. I'm saying I'm ignoring what I'm seeing now. I don't care what I'm seeing now from Steph Curry. As long as Steph Curry is healthy come playoff time and his teammates are healthy come playoff time, I am not concerned. I truly am not.
I understand that. And look, I love Stephen Curry. I wish in all the ages of basketball, I can shoot the rock like Stephen Curry could shoot from the distance he shot the ball from. We've never seen anybody in the history of the game do something at the level he's done it. But what I'm asking you, Stephen A., is to go into the history books of that incredible, beautiful Russell Crowe mind of yours, right? And tell me about those clutch moments where you're like, that's when Steph came through.
I'm Googling Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe, Beautiful Mind. Russell Crowe, Beautiful Mind is the movie.
Beautiful Mind movie reference.
Yes.
Sorry, I didn't explain that properly. Now I get it. I was thrown for a second.
No, I don't have those because I saw Klay drop 41 against OKC. Okay. I've seen plenty of instances where we wanted Steph Curry to step up and somebody else did it. So you're absolutely right. But I've also seen games where, guess what? We said, okay, could it have been a final moment for Steph? Sure. But he had 35.
Okay.
You know, and he shot 50% from the field.
He shot
40% from three-point range. I'm just saying.
Hey.
He's all a part of it.
Russell Crowe, we're out of time. I just want you to know, in clutch time this season, you have lots of nicknames. I prefer just Stevie.
It's beautiful,
though. But I still haven't gotten permission to just call him Stevie. Only Mad Dog can. All right, in clutch time this season, Morant has better percentage in point field goal percentage and three-point field goal percentage. So I just wanted to help bolster Jay Will's argument there.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.